On this installment of Folk Image, we have an interview with Jake Armading. Bluegrass Unlimited magazine says it's tempting to single out Jake Armading as a budding star, and he's here in our Folk Image studios. Welcome to Folk Image, Jake.
Thanks, Jeff.
Growing up in the Armading household, at what age did you become aware of your father, Taylor Armading's musical activities, and approximately at what age did you realize that this is something you might like to try yourself?
Probably age one, even though I couldn't form many coherent thoughts. But my dad was kind of a sadist. He would he would put headphones on my small cranium and make me listen to Russ Barenberg, and I would just sit there. It was kind of a mean trick, actually. It was the one way to get me to stop yelling and crying. It was the one way to make me shut up, I guess, is to make me listen to this really complicated, jazzy, grassy kind of stuff. And I would just sit there, absorbed in it. And I'm sure I didn't know that that was something I wanted to get into, but I think if I could have known anything other than the basic thoughts you have at age one, it was probably around age four.
Did they tell you that you were a difficult child, as far as you cried a lot as an infant, and this
I
is what
I did. I cried all the time, and my mom took me to the doctor, and he told her those very words, actually, that I was going to be a difficult child.
You bear some resemblance, actually, to one of my nephews, and he cried a lot as a baby too.
Yeah.
here we go. You know, how old were you when Northern Lights was formed?
I was not born.
You were
Northern,
not.
Yeah,
it
Northern Lights
did
was,
precede your birth.
That's right. I was currently not even a glint, as they say. It was I think 1977 when I don't think they were called Northern Lights at that time, or maybe they were, and then they split up in the very early 80s before they reformed. But there was a band called String Fever in there somewhere, but it was essentially Northern Lights. And,
okay.
My dad was sort of he wasn't. The guy who got everyone together, but he was one of the founding members.
Okay. I'm trying to... Even my memory's a little faded as far as those those times, because, you know...
That's okay, man.
It was the late 70s that I really got into doing folk music, but that was in a different state, so I think it might have been at one of those times before the Northern Lights really got a name for themselves.
Yeah.
Really started putting
an
album out.
The mid-80s, I think they really started... Mm-hmm. Coming along.
Would you like to start with a song right now?
Sure. Sure. This is the first cut off a record that came out yesterday.
Thank you.
would try to play the great romance. Oh, 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 Lord. Over a modern conversation, sobbing obligations, I caught a V-formation in her eyes. I is my destiny.
Jake Armading, performing live in our studios here at Folk Image. It's a track from the new album, Destiny's Flight. Your instruments, your three primary instruments, fiddle, mandolin, and guitar. What sparked your interest in each one of these? How did you end up falling into playing each one?
Well, again, I have to plead the fifth, actually, on the fiddle, because it was forced on me. And I'm very glad it was, of course, but I was almost five at the time, and my dad started me on classical violin lessons, and it wasn't too long before I started wanting to improvise and play some fiddle tunes and that kind of a thing, because this stuff, I mean, my dad was always practicing the mandolin around the house, and that made me want to kind of do the same thing on the fiddle, so I was taking classical training and sort of learning how to improvise at the same time, which was a great way to do it. It was almost like speaking two languages from a very young age. And then I just got interested in the mandolin later on, looking for, I guess, another challenge, not that I had conquered the fiddle, but just looking to expand a little bit. And I knew all the strings were the same as the fiddle, so I figured all I had to learn was the right hand. And it's not quite that simple, but it was sort of an easier crossover than it would have been, you know, going to certainly something like a wind instrument or even another stringed instrument. And then just got interested in the guitar when I got interested in writing songs. And sort of, I mean, the guitar and piano are the best instruments, I think, to express yourself as a song, at least as a solo performer. And so that's the way I went with that.
So you would vindicate all of those parents who force lessons on their children. It may pay off, you're saying.
Yes and no. It's like you, as a parent, I think you have to look at your kid and be honest with yourself and try not to fall victim to those urges. Like, you know, I always really wanted a musician in the family or something like that. It's like if that's your only motivation, you might be going at it the wrong way. But if you're looking at your kid and you can tell that there is some musical interest, talent or interest, or, you know, both are good, but at least interest, and you see potential there, you know, thinking realistically, you see maybe potential in this kid to start with lessons, then yeah, I think it is the way to go. And sometimes you can't even tell until you start something like piano lessons, which, you know, probably every other kid takes at least a year of. But I just think the only thing that's really important is to, you know, keep watching and seeing if your child is taking to this kind of education well. And if they're not, I mean, don't force it. You know, don't torture them.
On the all-important subject of songwriting, which we just started to touch on here, you wrote most of the songs on your two albums. When did you realize you had that gift? Did you pick up the guitar first and then write, or did you get the inspiration and say, well, I need an play an instrument like a guitar to express this kind of, you know, ability?
Well, I was, you know, composing lines on the fiddle, like riffs and different solos. And so I knew I could create, you know, I knew I could come up with things. And, but it wasn't, you're right, it wasn't until I picked up the guitar that I sort of found a way to put them into, you know, make a song out of it.
In a few of your songs, you use ancient Greek and Roman mythology motifs. Do you have a fascination for those stories of old? Did you study them in college?
I really do. Those filtered in just because they, in most cases, they were what I was studying at the time, or they were, you know, somehow I was reading a book of Greek myths or something like that. But I've always been fascinated by those, by the idea that there was this whole culture that really believed that the gods were just human beings. A lot like them, except just sort of with this inheritance of divine power, but they could screw up just as easily as humans could, and that whole thing. It was so interesting to me.
Their names are also poetic and musical. They flow pretty good.
Yeah, it worked out. It worked out really well for the sort of phonic qualities of songs.
And I hit upon the liner note in your new album that says, "Ongoing thanks to everyone for pointing out that Odysseus has no daughters."
Yeah, a lot of people have come up to me and said, you know, he didn't have any daughters. And I have to say, oh, really? I didn't know that. But well, I hope I'm not the only songwriter guilty of this, but I was in desperate need of a rhyme for the last pre-chorus of a song called Ithaca. And it's sort of an inside joke. But I have to use the word daughters to rhyme with otters and waters, because, you know, sons wouldn't really work. And so all of a sudden, Odysseus had daughters. And, you know, they're not mentioned in the in Homer, but they may have existed anyway. You know, maybe they were just one of those details that Homer forgot.
Just because it's not mentioned doesn't mean he didn't have
exactly
daughters. Yeah,
he probably didn't forget many details, though, with as long as those books were.
That there sort of reminds me of the musical license with history, too, that I interviewed an artist from New York City once who had written a political historical song about Teapot Dome. And in the story, Warren Harding, I believe, was inaugurated in he says in the January cold in January. Well, back in those days, presidents were inaugurated in March. They still were inaugurated in March and not
right.
January.
Right.
So it was a little bit of a poetic license, but it worked right. Well for the rest of the song. So,
generally, I'm in favor of historical accuracy, but I mean, if it's not going to be an ethical issue, and I don't think it was in this case, then I think it's fine.
A little poetic license there.
Yeah.
When did you start performing with Northern Lights, and what did it teach you about performing and touring? Was it a good training ground?
Oh, it was excellent, and I'm still discovering now. Hello. What a good training ground it was. I think the first time my dad sort of let me hop up on stage, I was probably 11 or 12. I think I was 12, maybe 13. And I came up for encores, and the band would let me come up just for the encore. And my dad and I kept lobbying to get me in the band, and the other members were nice about letting me get into it. And by the time I was 14, I was a full and active member. And it was such a blessing to be able to be in a professional band that was, I mean, not touring nationally, but doing a lot of touring regionally, and getting all around New England and play in front of these audiences. It just to get the feel for playing in front of a crowd and to lose some of that fear, you know, because I think, I mean, there's exceptions, of course, but I think everyone has a little bit of stage fright.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you get more and more comfortable with it. And so, yeah, Northern Lights was a very lucky thing for me.
Ready for another song?
Sure. I can do... I can do the mythological number we just mentioned. This is this is actually a track that's on my first record, which was just released by me, and which I carry around in my trunk. But Compass was really interested in putting it on the second one, and so you get to hear it all over again. It's called Ithaca. Could I ride on the dolphins and otters?
Could I fly? Could I walk on the waters? Could I know that my wife and my daughters will see me again? Oh, see me again in Ithaca. You call me like the horizon calls the sun. Oh, Ithaca.
Jake Armerding, live in our studios here at Folk Image with a song called Ithaca, which appears on both of his albums. His most recent one, just called Jake Armerding on Compass Records, and his first album called Caged Bird, available at your website, right?
That's right.
JakeArmerding.com. Last name spelled A-R-M-E-R-D-I-N-G. Okay, just so we get that URL right. Of course, this is an internet site, so they can see it visually as well, which also helps. But the old radio habits come back.
That's right.
You don't lose them entirely. Back onto the subject of touring and live performances. You've had the opportunity to tour with David Wilcox and the Judith Edelman Band. Mm-hmm. How did those opportunities come about?
Well, Judith, let's see what happened. I think that situation was through Northern Lights. Northern Lights was playing, I think, at the Iron Horse, and Matt Flinner, who played in Judith's band at the time, was also playing in a group called Loose Ties. Yeah, it might have been.
Yeah, one of those groups,
composed of players who I think lived mostly out west. I think Matt lived in Wyoming at the time. Jackson Hole or something like that. And anyway, both bands were on the bill at the Iron Horse, and so he saw me play, and I guess he was impressed, and he I think just called me up kind of out of the blue. It was funny too, because I had been poking around at a CD store, and I had seen his new CD recently, and I was thinking of picking it up, and the next day he just sort of called me. I thought that was pretty weird. But he's like, would you be interested in, you know, going on tour for a couple of weeks? I'm playing with a singer-songwriter named Judith Edelman. And I was like, sure. And so he sent, you know, CDs and got practiced up, and we went on the road, and it was a great time. I had never really been kind of, I guess, on tour in a more national way, I guess. And Judith mm-hmm. was touring nationally. She was getting some gigs out west, and she had a later tour that went up the East Coast. And so we got together a few times to do that. It was a really fun collaboration, because I had great fun instrumentally playing off Matt, who's just a wizard on the mandolin, and Judith's songs were really fun to play. She's a great songwriter, and so that also sort of helped me get some sea legs in a way. And the David Wilcox situation wasn't actually a tour. It was sort of one show where I was out in Rapid City. We had both been hired, I guess, as instructors for an improvisation seminar out in South Dakota in Rapid City by Wheaton College. And through getting to know each other that week, I got to play on the bill with him at the end of the week. There was a Friday night show that he and Charlie Peacock were actually headlining. And then we got together again 6 months later down at Charlie's house, where he recorded tracks that would later become part of a live album that he released recently. And so I got to play on that too. And that was a big thrill.
Yeah, sounds like exciting opportunities. I know Judith's I haven't had a chance to hear her perform live, but if the energy on the album comes off live, quite an experience to be a part of, undoubtedly.
She gives a great show.
Your first album was totally your own independent effort, but recently you were signed to Compass Records in Nashville. Mm-hmm. How did the label become aware of you, and what convinced Allison Brown and Company to bring you on board?
Well, I was very fortunate to have Allison Brown as a contact, because she played in Northern Lights for about 3 years, I think. She was going to Harvard at the time. And I think it was her actually just putting in a call to my dad back in the very early 80s and just sort of saying, you know, hey, do you want to get the band back together? Do you want to play? And my dad, I think, had been looking for an excuse to do just that, even though the band was kind of on the back burner at the time. And so she and my dad got together with Bill Henry and Bob Emery and formed, I guess it was kind of the second iteration of Northern Lights. And she, of course, got to know Taylor's family, which was me. And I was, you know, playing a little bit of fiddle at the time. I was kind of the kid fiddle player. She was just sort of aware of my existence, I guess. And growing up, I always knew that she had played in the band, even though when she left Harvard, when she graduated, she left the band and moved, I don't know, maybe back to California. But I always had her as a contact, and so I sent her the first CD, or my dad did, actually. And she wrote an email back and just said, you know, this is great, we love this stuff. And so I would just send her stuff I would come up with. My dad and I put together like a little tape of bluegrass songs, and I would send that. And these tracks were in sort of the rough mixing stage, and I just sent those down. I saw her actually at a show in Merrimack College. And I just said, hey, this is some of the stuff we're working on, and you just have to thank people for taking the time to check things out and taking you seriously, because, I mean, in these days when anyone is capable of making a CD, there's just, it's no longer kind of a defining mark to have your own CD. I mean, everyone sort of does, and so there's a lot of CDs floating around. And if you can, the trick is to get someone to sit down and listen with it. And she's always been very, 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 very cool about that. And so that's where it began. They listened to this, and I guess they thought that there was something here that they could sell.
It was an ongoing relationship that blossomed, you might say.
That's right. That's right. It was a contact that I was fortunate to have.
So far, which experience have you found to be more rewarding? Producing your own album or signing with a label, and what are the pros and cons of each?
Oh, well, let's see. I'll have to be careful here. Let's see. Well, I actually produced both records, but it was a little interesting to have to sort of marry all my desires to, you know, what Compass is thinking, because Compass, being a business, has a much better sense of what will work in the marketplace than I do. And yet, you know, I have my own pretty well-defined ideas of what I want to see on there. So it's always like a push and pull kind of a thing, and hopefully in the end you end up with a product that does both. You know, everyone is satisfied, and I think we accomplished that this time. With Caged Bird, I'm not sure, you know, if a huge label or a small label even had picked up that record and suddenly put all this promotion behind it and pushed it all over the country. I'm not sure it would have done that well. It was basically a record where I made like every decision, and you know, I'll still stand up for all those decisions, at least at the time. And people really dug the album, but those were people in my circle. Those were people at the colleges I went to. All my friends loved it, and I think. You know, I think it would have done okay on a national level, but I'm not sure. I think that the record we've put out now is a bit more commercial, in a good sense. It's I think it'll appeal to a wider audience, and so, you know, both aspects have been, both records were rewarding in different ways. It's I think a trick of balancing out. You don't want it sounding too commercial. You know, you don't want it sounding too produced and too processed, because that's, you know, you get away from the art of it all. But at the same time, if you're, sometimes you can fall into the trap of of kind of the singer-songwriter crouched in his corner and just sort of playing things that make sense to no one but himself. And I just feel like you need both of those things. You need a little bit of commercial value, and you need something that could be of no commercial value whatsoever, but can appeal on a much deeper level. And I think it's the combination of those that makes a great piece of art.
Would you like to play one last song for us?
Sure, sure. Let's see, we could do... I'm going to try this one. I haven't tried this one yet, but... This is called You Took Me In. Dark is in the day, cold is in the gray, as I begin. Dirty as the breeze, my head between my knees, I fiddle with my chain again. And you blew in and smiled me away. You blew in, I knew not what to say. Oh man, you brought me. Dripping at your door with hat in hand, now I have you. And up above your desk I see it all. There's 1,500 marks upon your wall. Oh, I look down and see you all. Took me.
your December, you took me in. Now I'm going it alone, and I don't mind. Oh, but I always will remember you took me in. Dark is in the day, cold is in the gray, as I begin to rain again.
Jake Armerding, our guest in the studio here at Folk Image, one of our rare artist interviews, and I want to thank you for stopping by and being one of our rare artist interviews
well,
on this website.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been great.
People can get more information on your website, which is jakearmerding.com.
Yes. If you're able to spell the last name, which few can, mm-hmm. you can find the website. But I'm sure if you like Google, you'll find something.
Right. So. You'll get close. And they can also find if you're going to be appearing at a venue near them somewhere.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. We're working on updating the schedule even as I speak.
And on Compass's website, I'm sure there's also some information as well now.
Yep, there's plenty of info there too.
So between those two websites, you can find out almost anything you want to know about Jake Armerding.
More than you'd probably ever even want to know.
Thanks again for stopping by.